technically the United States is already bankrupt.
I don't think anybody's looking for a fight. They're just looking for a place to live.
This is Radio Eco Shop. Hello, I'm Alex Smith, and this week we're going to take a quick cruise through the battered economy. We are all asking, what happens when newspapers disappear, when the journalists behind the TV networks are laid off? One answer is citizen journalism. We're finding informed content in blog post comments, sometimes better written than the newspapers, and it's coming in hot, fast, and free. How about this YouTube video presented by just George from California? I like it, George. Just getting out around town, observing what the mainstream media don't find interesting, the little signs of desperation in the falling middle class.
See, guys, this is a typical park in Southern California, at least in my area. As you can count, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's like 20, 25 cars in the parking lot. It's 10 a.m. in the morning. There's just a couple people with their kids at the park, but I've actually looked in these cars. There's a couple sleeping in the cars. There's a guy, you know, living out of his van, smoking a cigarette. And there's a lady over here using the laptop. A lot of these parks have electrical outlets, and people come here, and this is where they hang out. This is the Starbucks where they hang out when they don't have money to buy a cup of coffee. So, you know, this is kind of happening more and more. People don't have work, so they're basically living out of their cars or starting to live out of their cars. I've seen them, guys. There's couples here with cars, with dogs in their cars, and they're sleeping right now, or they're just listening to music, just, you know, waiting out the hours, just hanging out. This is the new future here in Southern California. Dead serious, 100%. Hey guys, this is George. We just got done with that Fleetwood story. And the other thing I wanted to address was the whole jobs. I mean, we're getting to a point in Southern California. I mean, on the front page of the New York Times, there's a family, Costa Mesa family, has a picture of a little girl in a bed that are living out of a motel room. So what you're seeing is, you know, California is grabbing the attention of the country. We have tent cities going up in Sacramento. There's a tent city in Ontario. They're popping up all over the place because people can actually live outside. Well, on the front page of the New York Times, what do you have? You have a middle-class family, formerly middle-class, and now they're living out of motels. They're living off of charity, and these were formerly middle-class people. I mean, this is coming to you guys, so, you know, pay attention to California. And here, I'll show you guys. Take a look at this. Over here, this is my local job listings. This is the job listings for my local paper. I don't know if you guys can see that, but, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's maybe 15, 20 listings in here out of the whole paper. This is the section we have for employment. And look at the type of jobs you have. An accounting job, a mechanic job. Okay, that makes sense. Cable TV, janitorial, you know, secretary, telemarketer, you know, warehouse. With these type of jobs, this isn't going to sustain people. This isn't going to sustain the economy. This is what type of jobs the economy is producing. They're not middle class, they're below middle class, they're below poverty line jobs. I mean, trust me, I've worked minimum wage jobs or a little bit above minimum wage. Those types of jobs just don't function in the real world. It almost costs you more to have that job than not to have a job at all. You know, you got to pay for your clothes, you got to pay for your gas, you got to pay for your car to get to a job. It almost becomes a zero-sum game. It's almost a gain. It's almost to the point where if you have to work at one of those middle wage jobs, it's better for you just to go collect cans or go collect plastic bottles. So if you guys are right now also, you know, they did an economic poll. You can see here, 96% of Californians are now pessimistic on the economy. 96%. This is now a self-fulfilling prophecy. It doesn't even matter if Obama's stimulus packages seem to work. 96% of the people are pulling back. They're not spending. This is a spiral effect. This is a spiral effect. Get ahead of the game. Cut back everything you can cut back. Try to get your living expenses down to zero as much as possible. And that way, it won't help the economy, but it's going to help you survive. Because what I found out personally is, you know, you can go out, work a minimum wage job, work a couple minimum wage jobs, but you're going to actually find out you're going to lose money in the long run. Find ways to earn money that are close to home, that aren't going to cost you a lot to have. So, hey, this is George reporting on the job situation. It's very bleak indeed.
Check out my blog for the YouTube address for George's video. It's just a park, no car chases, just another sad story. My friends, while watching the U.S. election speeches in November 08, I was struck by one thing. Both candidates spoke for a class. Supposedly McCain and the Republicans spoke for the rich, and Obama for the middle class. He kept saying he spoke for the middle class. No one even suggested that they represented the poor, who are rapidly becoming the majority of Americans. Stunning. Tax cuts mean nothing to people who can't make enough to pay taxes. Refund checks don't reach the people who need the help most, the ones with no address. The media of America, studded with well-paid anchors, and they all have their hair done so nicely, and all the experts appear, and usually they're bald men, and they've blanked out American poverty for, well, as long as I've been alive. Now that a few middle-class types, people who could have been us, are falling down the ladder, suddenly the U.S. networks have discovered tent cities and single moms on welfare. Suddenly, now that we worry we're going there too, and maybe that's why they're showing it to us, just so we can see where we're headed, the poor become visible, at least for a few minutes. How is it the U.S. media managed to ignore horrible poverty for so long?
It's a very tragic occurrence, but I think it's just the beginning. There's about $750 trillion of derivative instruments outstanding that nobody completely understands or can get their arms around.
I've been to a house with three kids where the refrigerator held nothing but a piece of birthday cake and a half-eaten sausage. Nothing in the cupboards but ketchup and sugar packages lifted from a restaurant. Have you mixed ketchup and sugar with hot water to make the last-ditch dinner? The kids couldn't chew a carrot. Their teeth were so bad. Right in the land of billionaires. And no, Mama wasn't an alcoholic or a drug addict. At least they had a home. According to a Harvard study, over 1 million American kids are homeless, and that number is growing. It breaks my heart to even imagine their lives as they shuffle around the world's wealthiest country, seeing all those ads and all those things to buy. I promised you some tips in this show, some things to do in the whirlwind. Here's one, and it goes against what you have been taught. All your life, people have promised upward mobility. Marry up. Meet the right people. Don't associate with those losers, the poor. Now it turns out the most exclusive country club in the most exclusive enclave leads only to Bernie Madoff, to the grand Ponzi scheme of Wall Street. During the next few years, many of us, too many, will become downwardly mobile. We don't know what to expect at all. My personal advice is to get a little more streetwise, to connect with the homeless and the disadvantaged. 2 weeks ago, I visited one of the best centers serving the poor in my hometown of Vancouver, Canada. It's called The Gathering Place, and it's run by the city. It provides a safe meeting place, which includes TV rooms and benches. You know, what a luxury to be able to watch TV. A guarded temporary storage room to put all your stuff in big tubs. And glory be, the all-important free showers. Upstairs, there's a cafeteria where once a day they serve up an all-inclusive $3 dinner, and a lot of people seem to have some sort of scripts or chips or special ways that they could get that dinner for nothing. I don't know about you, but I often learn my most important lessons by embarrassment. When I do something stupid and everybody sees it, I don't forget that easily. So I don't mind telling a story on myself if it might help you. I decided to go for the meal and joined the line. The bearded thin man ahead of me said it would be an hour wait. I believed him, even though a large clear sign announced dinner would be in 15 minutes. Then he disappeared around the corner, saying I had to wait because only two were allowed in at a time. What did I know? The line behind me shoved forward because, well, that was a lie, too. He was just kidding me. My self-appointed guide knew a gullible outsider and had fun with me. But I learned this. As much as I like to brag about sustainability and visits and friends on the poor side of town, I'm still a middle-class mark with few street smarts. How about you? If we really had to live on the streets, we might not last long. Part of the solution is to connect with those who know how to survive in a city when money can't be found. Maybe we can pick up at least a few hours to volunteer at a local homeless shelter, meet people who know hard times and learn from them, look into people's eyes, locate the shelters, the parks, the warm spots for sleeping, the free meals, the Labor Day pickup spots. Try standing on the street for a day. Look around. Meanwhile, maybe you could take some clean water out to the tent city and blankets to the cold people. Do something, feel better, and know we may be helping our future selves or relations and the country. Rule number one, get streetwise now. My second tip will take you in a completely different direction. That is, do what you can to connect directly with sources of food. I started with locating the food co-ops and small warehouses that distribute food, but we'll deal with bulk orders from individuals. I even found a small granary right on the edge of town. Chat up the vendors at the farmer's market, learn their names. We may need to go further to meet the people who produce our food locally. In Vancouver, there is an organization whose founding purpose was to link food-aware customers with organic growers in the area. It's called Farm Folk City Folk. Check it out at ffcf.bc.ca or just Google Farm Folk City Folk. This is a model organization which you could set up in your own city. A listener sent in another great tip, which resulted in this interview. Down in the concrete city, not everybody has the gardening skills or a place to grow their own food. Here is a great idea. Valerie Gates is an award-winning designer in the Boston area. Let's listen to her technique for getting by in hard times. It's called We'll Work for Food, but it's not what you think. Valerie, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, so Valerie, do you stand out in the street with the classic down and out sign?
No, this is a little more sophisticated. I thought of this project at Christmas time when I was reading Kingsolver's book, Animal Vegetable Miracle, and also Michael Pollan's book, Omnivore Dilemma. I realized after I read the book two things. One, that these small farms don't have any marketing budget, and therefore they're not able to compete with the larger farms, and it's something that they definitely need. And two, that as a mother of two, my children really didn't know where food came from. So I tried to kill two birds with one stone starting this project.
And could you just tell us, how does your project work?
Well, it started by offering a three-tiered process for local farms. The first tier would be that I would work with five farm partners doing their design work, their websites, their branding, their brochures, in exchange for their organic produce or food, which in turn I would feed my family, feed my children, and blog about it on the website, We'll Work for Food Project. And the second tier would be 75% off our studio rates for farms. The third tier would be 50% off our rates. And the fourth tier would be a phase-out, 25% off our rates.
And what do you do for the farmers?
We do everything from creating logos and branding for them to websites, to brochures, to farm signs, bumper stickers, you name it. Anything, any kind of design they need, but also we offer them a healthy dose of marketing advice and help with getting press and media kits and everything a business needs to get press and get noticed these days.
I think that's just such a great idea. How did you discover local small growers in your area?
Well, I personally did not have any experience with too many local growers, so I contacted CMAP, which is the Southern New England, Southern Eastern Massachusetts Agriculture Program, and I found out about them and put a small blurb in their newsletter on a Friday in February, and by Monday I had 15 farms that had contacted me. So I looked to see where the farms are located, what kind of produce they had, what their needs were for marketing, spoke to them, and decided on the first five to work with on the trade barter basis.
And what are these operations like? I mean, I presume they're not agribusiness, so are they mainly family farms?
Yes, but the good majority are family farms. A lot of them are husband and wives, and I was really impressed with and surprised by the age group that I was finding. I was finding lots of young couples with young children starting farms. Maybe that's a renaissance in the past couple years, but my impression of a farmer was pretty archaic until I went out and met these farmers, and a lot of them are in their 30s. A lot of them have small children and actually live on the farm, and it's very hard work. It's many hours getting up before dawn and not finishing till way after dark. But it seems to be a lifestyle that's catching on with a younger crowd. So part of the marketing that I've found important is to create a hipness to farming. We're doing T-shirts, we're doing logos that are fun and young and hip, and sort of following, you know, the Life is Good style branding and making farming fun again and attractive to younger farmers and younger eaters as well.
I'm so happy to hear this. You've shattered my image of the old New England farmer who's dying out and there'd be nobody left.
I know. I think it's wonderful. A lot of these young couples are finding farms from their grandparents or buying farms from the older generation. And they're very interested in splashy branding. They're very savvy. They understand that branding's important. And they're interested in having a bright, great image. So if you go on our blog, you'll see one I did was for Frog Acres Farm. And it's it looks like a poster design. It's a frog leaping over a sunflower. And it's not your dad's Oldsmobile. It's definitely the new wave of farm branding. And I'm having a lot of fun with it because I can really connect to a younger group and help these farms change their image.
Do you have tips about people, you know, when they start to make these kind of connections with local food producers about how you develop these kind of relationships? Do you take it slow or do you just come out and say, well, here, this is who I am and this is what I do? Or?
Well, I think it's really important to go to the farm and to visit the farm and spend a lot of time on the farm with the animals, see what's grown, see what they provide, see what kind of landscape they have, and see how big they want to be, because some farms don't have the capabilities of providing food for a large number of people. So we have to be careful about building too big or too grand a website for them so that those farms would attract more of a local crowd than somebody who wants to have more of a regional reach. But I think every farm is quirky. Each farm has personality, and I think you have to go and meet the farmers and see what kind of personality they want to portray their farm as. And again, the food is different too. I have a woman down in Rhode Island who does eggs, and she's known as the Egg Lady, and she has these wonderful green eggs. So we're definitely creating a logo that has chicken and eggs in it for her, because that's part of her brand equity.
Well, now we just need the green ham to go with it.
I've yet to find that. I don't know if I'd want to eat that if it was green.
No, I wouldn't either. Well, we're just about out of time. Can you tell us what's next for you or any other tips you'd like to offer and then give us your website, please?
Sure. The website is willworkforfoodproject.com. That's where I'm blogging about the farms, the work I do with the farms, and as well as my family's eating habits and how that's changing. This project is really taking off. We're thinking of expanding into seasonal dinners where we bring the farmer to the city and talk about food and have gourmet chefs cook the meals seasonally. But we're also talking about a TV show where we would do the same thing. And that would be a seasonal, how do you cook what's in season? How do you cook 10 pounds of broccoli? And how many meals can you make from that? Because seasonally, things come in at different times. And so it's a different challenge on how to cook with seasonal and local food. So we really are expanding, and stay tuned.
That's great stuff. That's Valerie Gates from the Gates Studio near Boston. Valerie, thank you so much for coming on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much for having me.
From the heart of San Francisco and going out to all America, this is Green 960 AM, the Radio EcoShock Show. Do you have skills that could help connect you with food growers? All sorts of alternative economics are popping out of the current crisis. One organic apple grower lets city dwellers adopt a tree. When harvest time comes, you get whatever that tree gives. You assume some of the risk, help the farmer who likely can't get any credit anyway, and may end up with a bumper crop of some great organic apples. Personally, I've had an invite to go out and speak in an agricultural area. Likely it will be a very small audience, but I'll go, just to start making friends and laying down roots where the food is. Tip number two, develop direct connections to local food producers however you can. On to tip number three, adopt a place to run away to. Chances are you will be stuck in the city. But what if roving armed gangs make city living unhealthy? What if disease or simple lack of food supply means you have to get out? Or a hurricane wrecks the town beyond immediate rebuilding? There are so many reasons, including the climate, which might drive you to seek another location, so you might as well develop a plan B ahead of time. I suggest checking out maps, figuring out gas supplies or getaway routes when the freeways are plugged, and pick a place you might want to go. Those with the money should go ahead and buy a cheap country place or at least a plot of land now. That's the best insurance and investment you will ever make, in my opinion. If you're really broke, try doing it with a group of people. We did that just a few years ago. Even if you can't buy, pretend. Get detailed maps of the area. Go camping in that place if you can. Figure out where the ducks land and the deer go. Introduce yourself to local farmers. Maybe even stash a few tools in a shed. Consider where you could squat in an emergency and grow some food. Check out the weather stats. Is there enough rain or river water for your garden? How long is the growing season? What do you need to know? It may seem like an imaginary exercise now, but it could provide you with at least some landing knowledge if you had to move, and millions of us will have to move in the coming years or decades. Finally, tip 4, something you can easily do now, print out a survival binder and get a few books. Sure, it's all there on the internet, but you need a home to get the net regularly, and the net easily could go down. It's so easy now to get a few simple, good recipe books for cooking and books on how to store food. The old standard, Joy of Cooking, tells you how to prepare anything, and Putting Food By is the Bible of food preservation. I keep finding important survival tips on the net, but if my hard drive goes bust or I can't afford the power bills due to a lost income, then what? So I print out the best into a survival binder. At least I'll have that, and I could rip out the most important pages for my backpack if I have to hit the road in a hurry for some reason. And just like the last depression, there will be millions of migratory people, even in the developed countries. That means where you live. Add climate change and it could be that migratory living will be even more common. In fact, that's how the first North Americans lived. That tells you about the real resource base here, once fossil fuels are removed and the climate shifts. I get out and walk every day with a backpack some days, just to be ready and able to move. Oh, and it adds years to your life, no matter what happens. 4 quick tips this week for hard times. Connect with the poor and get street smart. Meet your local food producers. Adopt a place to go if you need to leave the city. And print out and practice the knowledge you might need. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and that's all I've got to say about that. You have been listening to Radio EcoShock. Our opening riff came from Beck's Gamma Ray. Be sure and tune in and get all our free programs from the website at ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock like an electric shock, .org. Thank you so much for listening.
Well, as thousands of people find themselves out of work and uncertain about where the next job is going to come from, a Hamilton man is hoping he can help them feel like they're not alone. Ramo Sino is a victim of the U.S. steel shutdown that put almost 2,200 people out of work. The emotion and stress of losing his job was enough that he put his feelings to music and wrote a song that now has a growing following on YouTube.
That was from CHCH-TV in Hamilton, and here, with his permission, is Ramo Sino singing Everything Comes at a Price.
I can't believe that I have to say that Daddy won't be going to work, not today. They say they don't need me, and I couldn't stay. And I don't know why my child has to see a mother and father lost in disbelief. The house feels much colder, we're all losing sleep. All we can do now is pray back that sense will somehow find its way. I never thought that I'd see the day when the factory sends all the workers away. The man on the corner is begging for some kind of change. And I never dreamed that I'd live to tell that my country gave in and sent us all to hell. I guess everything comes at a price and we're all up for sale. Good men and good women have given their blood, their sweat and their tears all this time, all for what? They're closing the doors and they're shutting us out.